Dogs are an important part of our lives. That means protecting them from parasites. Ask your vet about NexGard Plus, afoxolaner, moxidectin, and pyrantel chewable tablets. NexGard Plus chews provide one-and-done monthly protection against fleas, ticks, heartworm disease, roundworms, and hookworms. Plus, they're delicious and easy to give. Use with caution in dogs with a history of seizures or neurologic disorders. Dogs should be tested for existing heartworm infection prior to starting a preventive. Ask about NexGard Plus Chews.
Did you hear that? That's what an estimated 500 horsepower sounds like. Nexco, give it to you. How about that? That's a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system with 18 speakers and a Biosonic sound experience. That's our legacy. You ready to be a part of it? Let's go, give it to you. Unlock the energy of the all-electric ZDX Type S. Order now at Acura.com.
Rushing over Brock Bowers, worrisome round one wide receiver profiles, and that day two and day three running back pedigree line, some of the key profiles and questions are addressed with special guest Scott Barrett, the engine, the CEO of FantasyPoints.com, at Scott Barrett DFB. I'm Chad Parsons, under the helmet, and let's get to the show. All right, we got Scott Barrett here, and one of the key points, I think, for this year's draft class and for rookie drafts, for dynasty leagues, and for fantasy purposes is, I think, that dividing line, day two running backs, day three running backs, because we don't have Bijan Robinson. We don't have Jahmyr Gibbs. We don't have these auto selects. We don't have these. We know exactly where they're going. Maybe Jonathan Brooks, if you were fully healthy and kind of on a different trajectory, we're getting some positive news out of him. But Scott, what do you kind of view in terms of the running back class tiering things and just a dialogue of how much maybe landing spot versus that day two versus day three pedigree for some of the guys you like or don't like is going to be this year?
Yeah, so this might just be a personal preference, but I only really care about high-end fantasy running backs in fantasy, especially dynasty. And the issue with this class is I'm not really seeing all that much to get excited about. Like, I like Jonathan Brooks. I think he has three down potential. Trey Benson, I like as a high end workhorse. But after that, I just don't see like the necessary upside for me to get excited about these running backs. I will say the running back position is far and away the most volume dependent position in fantasy. And it's the point where even if I had, you know, a player like, let's say, Braylon Allen as like a mediocre prospect, if he goes to the Chargers, he goes to the Cowboys or the Giants, he's someone I'm going to get excited about. But as we're recording now, pre-draft, I'm excited about those top two. And then after that, I imagine I'm going to be chasing other positions just because I don't see the bell cow potential. I see a number of good RB2s on a team or change of pace options. And there's just not the upside there for me to get excited about it. It's just like roster cloggers. So that's kind of how I'm viewing it. I have those big two, and then I have Blake Corum in like his own tier, just because I think he probably goes to the Chargers in round two, and our film guy loves him. And then after that, I'll throw a dart on Audric Estime. I like Tyrone Tracy's upside. I like Blake Watson as like a super late round dart throw. But outside of that, I'm like basically neglecting the position.
One thing you said there, you know, with Trey Benson, I have seen a couple mock drafts with him slipping to the early round four range, which again, I don't think we should be super surprised by someone that goes maybe in the 50s or 60s versus, hey, they end up running back six and they drip to day three. What would that kind of do versus, you know, if it was a Giants landing spot, which is accessible, but maybe people don't view it as open immediately with Devin Singletary there. It's not as wide open as, say, Dallas or something like that. And so I think, you know, one of those top guys falling a little bit, and just for your example, I think that would be close to home for you, would be if Trey Benson slips, what do you think is kind of the ceiling and floor for kind of where you would put him on a board or be comfortable drafting him?
Yeah. So again, with the running back position, like volume isn't everything, but it's like damn near almost everything. I want talented running backs in part because talented running backs get more volume. But the most predictive variables we have are draft capital. Landing spot is massively important. And the reason we like draft capital is like you can be a sub-mediocre talent and still get a tremendous amount of volume because that GM, head coach is invested in your success. These don't want to look foolish. They spent all this draft capital on you. So like you have a Najee Harris or a Clyde Edwards-Helaire who just, you know, kept getting second and third chances, or, you know, Jalen Warren's not, you know, clearly the more efficient, but it's Najee getting the bulk of the touches. So you're talking about a round four draft capital. I would bury him on my rankings. I would not be drafting him. The exception being it's, you know, maybe like all teams played chicken at the running back position. So he was like round four, but the third running back drafted, and it's a spot where I can envision immediate playing time. But typically, yeah, you're talking about day three draft capital on a running back. I want nothing to do with you.
Yeah, I think Isaiah Spiller, I remember years ago, you know, that's a good example of being pushed up boards. He went, I think, early second of some rookie drafts. And, you know, obviously you're investing in something that the NFL teams didn't really invest all too highly in. And you got to be really careful with those types of profiles, especially early second, even mid second round of some of those rookie drafts. And another one that I would ask, and I think this is sort of another stress test, which is, Dallas is going to be the situation that whether it's a high-end guy in round two, obviously it sounds like if it was Jonathan Brooks or Trey Benson, you'd be very comfortable, you know, having them as a strong running back one of the class and, you know, somewhere up there in the first round. But I would ask if Dallas fades the position, say they go round four, round five, and it is someone you like in it. What if they draft round five, Tyrone Tracy? You know, that's like the most notable ad that they have. I mean, this really could cause a lot of ripples for the situational guys being pushed up. You know, do they end up going in the top 10 or 15 of a rookie draft versus the pedigree folks that say, you know, that's still a round three rookie draft pedigree, so you're just going to fade it completely. Where kind of on that spectrum would you be in a Dallas type situation?
Well, then you're looking at like Antonio Gibson when he went to Washington, where it was, you know, he didn't have the premier draft capital, but minimal target competition. I think they cut Adrian Peterson like right before the season started. He was supposed to be the round one start, but everyone's like, oh, he's toast. So they kind of had that heads up there. And then he became their RB1, and that's like the best comp for Tyrone Tracy, another converted running back. I mean, just because they have no one else, and it's a player I like, I can get excited with that. But again, like at the end of the day, day three draft capital rarely ever works out. The one guy I really made an exception for was Dameon Pierce. I'm actually like still pretty bullish on him. I just think he's like a horrible fit for that scheme. But he went what, like the first pick or the third pick on day three. And then they also gave him like the most ever money for a day three running back. I mean, again, it's all just a balance of talent, draft capital, and landing spot. I don't know.
Yeah, Dameon Pierce is always that example. And I always say Latavius Murray from when he went to the Raiders, of a guy that initially I didn't like, you know, the price point, or when he started to get work and he was the starter, I just didn't buy in. And then when they fall back down to a backup or someone that's a throw in, or even they get dropped in some dynasty leagues, all of a sudden, like, I'm back in, baby. And I can definitely see in the next 6 to 9 months, like, I have a lot more Dameon Pierce than I have today or a year ago, just because, again, he kind of fades back to where he would have been in most likely circumstances, you know, coming out of the college there. A player that I heard you had some really good points on Twitter outlining Brock Bowers' profile. So this is one where, you know, Kyle Pitts hasn't worked out. It's been injury. It's been, hey, where's the quarterback? It's been, you know, how are they going to use him in a lot of different ways? And so he's being used as a negative point, even though obviously you look at things like yards per route run, you look at some of the ways that tight ends need to be viewed a little differently in the NFL than wide receivers per se. And so Brock Bowers, it feels like, hey, even if he goes in the teens, do you view it as round one is round one for tight end pedigree? If he goes quote unquote top 10, you know, if that's number 10, if that's just inside the top 10, does that really matter to you? And just outline a couple things that make him so rare for you. Cause you made a really good argument that he should be much higher on overall dynasty boards than a lot of folks have him.
Yeah, I just don't care where he goes. I think there's a case to be made. He's already the dynasty tight end one. I just love this player so much. I'd really encourage you to check out my rookie tight ends article. Check out the dank stats section. It's by far the dankest stats you're going to find of it, probably any player in this class. I think he's no worse than the second best tight end prospect in at least a decade. If I put him into my wide receiver model, he would have ranked as the wide receiver three in this class. I just absolutely love him, and I kind of don't care where he goes. I still kind of think he's going to go early, but it wouldn't shock me if he doesn't, just because there's been this constant talking point. We heard it from Daniel Jeremiah, we heard it from Lance Zierlein, we heard it from Dane Brugler, where because he's a tight end, you're losing value, because like look at the contracts wide receivers are getting, and look at the cost of a rookie wide receiver on a rookie contract, and then contrast that with tight end. I get that. It's just, well, let's talk about second contracts, right? If Brock Bowers is a second contract player for you, and he absolutely should be, then he could be one of the biggest values in all of salary cap football. Everything I've looked at said that Rob Gronkowski was the most underrated or the best non-quarterback in football throughout his reign. And Vegas bookmakers, they set lines, and then a player's injured, they drop the line. And Gronk was far and away number one of any non-quarterback in terms of how he was moving lines when he was out. I think George Kittle and Travis Kelce are similarly on that spectrum. Like Travis Kelce, these past, I don't know, 8 years, has been basically a top five wide receiver every single season, like the most consistent of any of these wide receivers, and top five every year. And then he's making what, like wide receiver 23 numbers. So, yeah, it's just, I love the player. Check out the write-up on him. I'd be so excited to draft him kind of wherever he goes, and to whichever team he goes.
Is playmaker a better word, in terms of, you kind of mentioned mixing him in with wide receivers? Is playmaker, in sort of this homogenous view of the NFL and how some of these tight ends aren't really tight ends and they're playing split out a lot, they're playing with their hand off the ground a lot? I just wonder if that's where we're kind of moving, because you kind of meant, I could see the argument of, Marvin Harrison and Malik Nabers are gone, a team wanting Brock Bowers over Rome Odunze, or right there, and he's wide receiver four or wide receiver three, somewhere in that range. And that kind of aligns with expected draft position and what we kind of expect to see versus wide receiver four plus in the class. But it seems like you need to have a more open view of playmaker. And the other part is highly durable, and just in terms of the floor you're going to get versus the hit rate of some of these wide receivers that are not in elite pedigree zones, top five and maybe even top 10. You go into the teens and 20s, tight end is a much higher hit rate, a higher floor there. So it's a push pull of trying to get that $30 million guy on that second contract versus, I kind of know what I'm going to get from a floor perspective at the tight end.
Yeah, I could absolutely see a team looking at it like this, where it's like, we can go Brock Bowers, we can go Brian Thomas Jr., but you know what? We already have a good deep threat, so maybe we don't need Brian. And Bowers, if he's just a big slot wide receiver, well, you know what? He's an elite big slot wide receiver. And like for fantasy, that's also exactly what we want. We want tight ends masquerading as wide receivers. They just
Right.
have that tight end positional designation, so those fantasy points go a lot further for you than they would as a wide receiver. You also mentioned where the NFL is trending. Like where the NFL is trending to me is just like Brock ba screams Brock Bowers. So like the rate of zone coverage league wide has increased in three straight seasons, maybe even more than that, but up to nearly 75% last year. And guess what? Brock Bowers is far and away the greatest tight end in PFF college history against zone coverage. We also saw the banning of hip drop tackles, which creates a disadvantage for undersized cornerbacks when targeting someone with the thick frame of a Brock Bowers, who's so freakishly elite at creating yards on his own with the ball in his hands via missed tackles or yards after contact. And so, yeah, I just see him being such a potent cheat code for an NFL team, and for my fantasy teams. I'm going to be trying to draft him everywhere.
Yeah, the low drop rate, which means, hey, the the nothing plays are minimal. You're talking about zone where he might have a little more space than a guy right on him when he makes the catch, and being elite after the catch. So like you said, maybe 10, 15 years ago, he's someone that goes on day two, but certainly not in today's NFL. And I wanted to ask, because I think, you know, a lot of people might sit there, they don't play in heavy tight end premium, and that's a whole different discussion. And if it's one quarterback, I mean, is Brock Bowers almost like we saw Kyle Pitts a few years ago? Is that someone you're going to be comfortable at 103, 104, 105 taking, just because of, hey, I know what I'm getting, even if the positional value would say you don't take tight ends this high, because you know you really have to sharpshoot the highest end. But if you have a tight end one, tight end two overall, I mean, that's kind of saying what your intent is.
No, I love the big three wide receivers. So one QB, non tight end premium, that would be my 101 through 103, and then Bowers 104 in a tight end premium super flex, let's say. Then you can I've been like I've had to do this multiple times where I had to choose between Romo Dunze and Bowers, and I think I went 50-50 across my tight end premium leagues. But yeah, I'd be really happy with either guy, and that's mostly just like, all right, where is my team weaker at?
Yeah, two PPR really does change the game for that juiced up
Oh my
score
God. That, all
for
right.
tight end.
Yeah. Easy 101, like
Easy
trade up for
101. Okay.
in two PPR for tight ends. Oh, hell yeah. Hell yeah.
Okay. All right. There you go. Heard it here. Brock Bowers, 101 over everybody else in two PPR.
I've never played in a league, so I could
Oh,
be
you
talking
haven't
out of
played
my
that?
ass,
Okay. Yeah,
but that just
1.5 is.
seems right.
Yeah, 1.5 is not super high in terms of the premium, but when you get start, you start getting tiered PPR, you're getting two PPR. Or what I love is when you get start two plus like 1.5 on the tight ends, which if you want to have the position matter and like through 50, 60 guys, that's definitely the one
Well,
where you.
I talked to Scott Fish about this. I was like, well, what about like a few years ago? He was looking for ideas for the Scott
Yeah.
Fish Bowl. And I was like, well, what about a start to tight end? And he's like, I just can never do that because I've looked at all of my dynasty leagues that have that, and it's just whoever has Travis Kelce wins every year. And so that's kind of how I was imagining with two PPR. But like I said, I've never played in that
Yeah.
format, so I don't
Well,
know.
I would say the one thing is make it start one if you do have that scoring. But what happens is if you got two decent tight ends, you start them a lot, you flex them, and that really makes it a lot more fun where you got some starting running backs. You want to go four or five deep at wide receiver, but it brings in that second or third tight end if a team wants to build out that way. Or if again, it doesn't dissuade you from, hey, having a couple strong tight ends, and you're like, I'm going to drop Bowers too. You know, I'm going to keep this market share domination going.
Did you hear that? That's what an estimated 500 horsepower sounds like. X-Go, give it to you. How about that? That's a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system with 18 speakers and a Beosonic sound experience.
Acura wins Daytona.
And that's our legacy. You ready to be a part of it?
X-Go, give it to you.
Unlock the energy of the all-electric ZDX Type S.
Give up.
Order now at Acura.com.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Another point, I kind of mentioned the day two running back pedigree here, but round one wide receivers. We've got an interesting crop beyond, you know, you kind of mentioned the big three. Beyond the big three, A, we've got questions. B, we've got some profiles that are not super, you know, they're the more athletic centric, maybe not the quite production that you want. How concerned are you with the guys that might get round one pedigree that don't check some of those historical boxes you would like for the quote unquote complete prospect?
Yeah, so I only have three round one grades for the wide receivers. I do not see Brian Thomas Jr. as a round one caliber prospect. He was really good as a deep threat last year, but he did nothing in every season before that. He was also very much a one trick pony. He had something like 47% of his receiving yards come on just the go route last year. Adonai Mitchell looks the least like a round one caliber wide receiver of any round one wide receiver in at least a decade. I tried to sum up his profile in one word, and it was nightmare fuel. It was so bad analytically. he could for sure be the outlier. Film's important, all that other stuff. Draft capital is really important, but just far and away the worst profile of any of these wide receivers expected to go in the top 40 or so picks. And then Xavier Worthy, you worry about the BMI. Troy Franklin as well, you worry about the BMI. Keon Coleman's kind of just, you know, on that Adonai Mitchell spectrum where the analytics really weren't great. Ladd McConkey, you can worry about durability issues, and he like crushed all the per target and per route stuff, but this is still a guy with only two 100 yard games. And Brock Bowers missed one of those games, his best ever game, which is another point. So it's like, you know, Brian Thomas, like clearly overshadowed by Malik Nabers, but like McConkey was even more overshadowed by Brock Bowers, a tight end, where it's like, if Bowers was a wide receiver, we would have him multiple tiers ahead of McConkey, just because the numbers were so dominant. But I did end up liking McConkey. But yeah, I just see massive red flags kind of with all these names, some more damning than others.
Yeah, one thing I mentioned about Xavier Worthy is he strikes you as a profile like, hey, if Will Fuller can run a great time and get into the top 25 or so, how is Xavier Worthy falling to 32 or the second round? That's the part I don't understand. Like, when we get all the way to Thursday night, if he doesn't get drafted, I'm going to have a really interesting just historical view of how did that happen when we do have flaws everywhere. Brian Thomas seems to be getting a big pass. And wide receivers are always fickle because you can make all these things, like you just said, you know, in terms of production, what was their level of competition there? But that's why you like to incorporate a lot of different looks, because if it's per route efficiency, if it's gaining targets, if it's a breakout season early, and then, hey, maybe there's a lot more competition. But I don't know. I find you put all that together and the guys that pan out are the ones that did better overall in those categories. And you want to keep making excuses for guys because they ran a 4.3. That's a dangerous, dangerous game. And you kind of mentioned a good pitch for Ladd McConkey, but he's still a guy that, you know, less than 50 yards per game in his career and 200 yard games. I mean, it's tough to hang your hat on that, but round one pedigree versus round two is massive at the wide receiver position. It's almost like if they go round two, it's so risky in terms of betting on them if they have that incomplete profile.
Yeah, I want to circle back on Worthy. An interesting stat from my article was like, okay, so fastest player in combine history. Right. Do you know he was the worst wide receiver in this draft class by career deep yards per target? I know Quinn Ewers, you know, that's an area where he struggled, but still, like, that's the fastest wide receiver ever was the worst deep threat in his class. Like, that's just crazy. I liked Worthy. I kind of went back and forth. Like, it was this sort of roller coaster ride where initially I really liked him, and then digging into the BMI stuff and some others, I came back down. And then ultimately what happened was I wrote, like, I don't know, 3,000 words in the footnotes of my article on Worthy. And so just like talking about the BMI thing, anyway, the conclusion to Worthy was just massively landing spot dependent. I need to wait and see where he goes. He could skyrocket up my rankings. He can plummet down my rankings. But I was digging into the BMI stuff, and we just talked about how the NFL is changing. There's more zone coverage, the banning of hip drop tackles, et cetera. Another way in which it's changing is Mike McDaniel has like mildly revolutionized the sport in terms of, or at least like massively popularized the rate of motion in the NFL, which is massive for these lower BMI wide receivers. So we see Devonta Smith being a recent hit, Jordan Addison, recent hit, Tank Dell, same weight, a little bit thicker, but same weight as Worthy. And a lot of what all these teams have in common is a high rate of motion, and motion can be used to create free access off the line. So there's McConkey's another guy, by the way, who really struggled with physical wide receivers and against press coverage. And so motion is a way to mitigate that. And so you look at the teams last year that used motion at the highest rates in the league, which again is like increasing every year since McDaniel became a head coach. It was Dolphins number one at 82%, then the 49ers, then the Rams, then the Chiefs, then the Lions. And I don't think it's a coincidence that those are all like the top five offenses or top five offensive play callers in all of football. And so maybe this is a minor point I'm blowing up, but like, to me, I want to see him land with one of those teams. And like, again, those are great teams. If he lands there, I'm going to be really excited to draft him. But you put him with a less forward-thinking offensive coordinator or offensive coordinator I'm less confident in. I could see him dropping down. I think it's also notable to me, you know, he played with Steve Sarkisian, who also coached Devonta Smith in his Heisman-winning season, another low BMI wide receiver. So maybe like he could mitigate the size concerns via intelligent play design or whatever, but, you know, put him with like Matt Patricia as OC and it's game over. But yeah, that's just kind of my thoughts on Worthy.
So it sounds like he's one of the more high variance guys. If he gets round one, if he gets one of the spots that you're looking for, you know, you're going to mitigate a lot of those potential question marks you have. And then if he goes to one of those bad situations, even if the pedigree is there, you're going to say, hey, they're just going to isolate him out there on an island and it's not going to go all that well.
You need
a lot of
teams
in the back half of round one, you know, so that's the range that you would obviously hope for him to go.
Exactly right. You said it better than I did.
Tyrone Tracy, we mentioned him a few minutes ago earlier in the show, but I do want to give you an opportunity, hybrid player, certainly one you pop on the tape, exciting guy. You mentioned Antonio Gibson, of a guy that has basically played two positions, just a very talented athlete. And I think that's an apt word for someone like Tyrone Tracy, and someone that honestly, in January, if you weren't really knee deep in the draft process, you didn't pick up on him until probably February or March in terms of got some buzz. Some of the notable pundits out there have been talking about him more and more as the weeks have grown. So just talk about Tyrone Tracy. It's a cloudy running back class, but he strikes you as the guy that, hey, you want to bet on physical traits and possibilities, and Tyrone Tracy is one of those.
Yeah. So I'm known for an article I wrote, Upside Wins Championships. And I've been saying like Tracy's just like the ultimate Upside Wins Championships sort of pick, because, you know, obviously a lot of concerns, but just like massive upside I'm seeing. So he was a wide receiver through five seasons, and then converted to running back last year. I don't think he ever had more than 17 carries, or he had 17 career, 33 career carries, never more than 17 in a single season. And then last year, he ranked first among all Power 5 running backs in the class with at least 100 carries. He ranked first in yards after contact per attempt, second in missed tackles forced per attempt. And then you have the upside of him as a receiver. You know, he wouldn't have been drafted if he stuck at wide receiver. But in 2019, he led Iowa in yards per route run ahead of Amir Smith-Marset, ahead of Sam Laporta. Adonai Mitchell never cleared 2.26 yards per route run. Keon Coleman never did as well. And so it's just the hope that, you know, he could be Antonio Gibson, or better yet, maybe he could be 2016 David Johnson. It's for sure a long shot and a dart throw, but I just find myself really attracted to that upside. He's a phenomenal athlete as well, like you said.
Yeah, the most likely story seems like day three, does he go to an intriguing spot where he has the potential year one to win that running back two job, and then game on from there in terms of trying to find opportunities. It's a little different, but the storyboard is Antonio Gibson, like you said, a guy that didn't play. Actually, I still remember going to the Senior Bowl, and it's like we didn't know if Antonio Gibson was going to be in the wide receiver group, running back group, and then that sort of helped affirm to us that he was going to be a running back going through the process. And Tracy, we haven't had as much ambiguity when we started back in January. How about finish out with a couple others in terms of interesting profiles? Johnny Wilson is one that a few months ago I was like, man, I really hope he can be a Darren Waller type. You know, is this going to be a tight end? Works out well. We've had no whispers of the tight end position from an NFL team. Again, I think maybe listening to how they plan on using him right after the NFL draft, when they talk about selections, that'll be key for the team he goes to. But Johnny Wilson, we rarely get guys this big wide receiver. He's been one we've been looking at in Devy Leagues for a couple of years now. But talking about Johnny Wilson, just in terms of he, you know, we got some big guys. We got some taller guys, but we don't have big and tall within this class, generally as big as Johnny Wilson most years.
Yeah, so I've been talking about contested target rate for a number of years, where it's like if you're over a certain threshold, let's say 27.5% of your targets came as contested targets in any season, it's a red flag. And like of a ton of round one, round two wide receivers, the only ever hit was Nico Collins. And so with With Wilson, I like immediately just wrote him off because he had two seasons within that threshold. Keon Coleman, his teammate, had one as well last year. And so I just wrote him off. But then I was writing my article and the guy just kept popping in like every single stat I looked at. And by the end, he became one of my favorite players in this class. Just absurdly dominant numbers. But yeah, check out the article. Just anything you want to look at. Keon Coleman, honestly, just looks like an inferior version of Johnny Wilson. And then here's the upside versus downside argument. The upside argument is like, analytically, it looks like he has the fourth best wide receiver one upside in this class, maybe even the fourth best analytics profile in the class, if you throw out the contested target concern. And then what's the downside? Like, honestly, it like might not even be that low, especially in a tight end premium league, because if this guy were to like a team were to draft him as a tight end, he'd probably be the number two tight end in the class for me. And you know, like if he, let's say I'm wrong and he busts as a wide receiver, like there's a pretty good chance he'll get a shot as a tight end. So yeah. He ended up becoming one of my absolute favorite players in the class. And I have a bunch of exposure to him already.
Yeah, it feels like in a tight end premium, you know, you bump him up a few spots, even though he's sitting there listed as wide receiver, because we see guys recycled and they can actually do pretty well. Hello, Darren Waller was that exact case for years, in addition to some of his off the field issues he worked through there in Baltimore before he became the dominant fantasy tight end. So, yeah, Johnny Wilson, mixed bag there. You see some stuff like, you know, the drop rate, you know, he's above the threshold to look for. And then, like you mentioned, contested targets, but he gained targets. He gained targets, and this is a rare. The thing is, the price isn't going to be prohibitive, I think. Like, this is someone we can probably target round three in rookie drafts. Maybe he even slips to round four, depending on that pedigree. Does he go round three, round four, round five? And like you said, maybe some of the early tea leaves are, he may not work out at a wide receiver and we recycle to a more valuable position, you know, upward mobility there. Last guy, Jaheim Bell. Jaheim Bell is one that, I mean, where is he going to play in the NFL? You kind of, the conversation you had with Xavier Worthy of landing spot dependent, I really want to know where Jaheim Bell goes, because I think there's some teams that are going to utilize him in a fun offensive weapon way. And I think half of the league would bury him, draft him round five and just be like, oh, he's our backup tight end, and not give it a second thought to all the things that he can do or try to figure out his most optimal way on offense.
Yeah, so we talked about a running back who is a former wide receiver. We talked about a wide receiver people are calling a tight end, and now a tight end people are calling a halfback. I put out a thread on him. He's my current tight end too, and I feel really good about it, despite being the consensus tight end 10 according to the mock draft community. Just like numbers out of control. He is the best ever season in PFF college history by yards per route run with the last, I don't know, 5 or 6 years, third best by career yards per route run behind only Bowers and Pitts. He's the best tight end ever with the ball in his hands, leading all Power Five tight ends since 2014 in yards after the catch per reception, by missed tackles forced per reception. He's the third fastest tight end in the class. And then what's the concern? The concern is he is 1 inch and 3 to 5 pounds lighter than Brock Bowers, than Sam LaPorta, than Trey McBride. And so it's like, why are we getting so hung up on 1 inch? Maybe there's something I'm missing with the film, but analytically, he looks awesome, like way better than Jatavion Sanders, in my opinion. Sanders, Bell was over 2.1 yards per route run from the slot, from in line, from out wide. Sanders was like below 1.25 out wide or in the slot. He just looks awesome. Obviously there's the concerns. He had more rushing yards than receiving yards 2 years ago, analytically, in a bad class after Bowers. I feel good about him as my current tight end too, barring a Johnny Wilson position change.
Yeah, Jaheim Bell. And then sadly, I put Johnny Wilson into my tight end model. And it's like, oh no, because we got these two guys that, again, we don't know how they're going to be used. We don't know if they're going to have a lot of fantasy value for us at the tight end position per se. And yeah, in a class where it's Bowers and question mark, those are two guys we may not get to see their full realized potential on a number of fronts there. But Jaheim Bell, exciting player. Pop on the tape, you see a guy that's, again, playmaker. That's kind of what you want at a position where you say, I don't know what we have here with a lot of round three, round four guys. You've already mentioned in passing, but where are a couple of big resources? You've written some mammoth articles. You already mentioned, if you were working for NFL teams, how you would write up these reports, how you would write up evaluations and analysis for positions. So what are the things in the week and obviously right after the draft, you're getting ready for your rookie drafts. What content would you like to promote for folks to find you?
Yeah, these might not be for you. These articles couldn't be any more self-indulgent. 16,000 words on the wide receivers. Just this is what I look forward to most at the end of every season is writing these pieces. So yeah, if you want a super deep analytics dive into the rookie running backs, wide receivers, and tight ends from a fantasy bent, head on over to fantasypoints.com and check those out.
Thanks to Scott Barrett for coming on, sharing his time and talents. He shared where you can find him over at Fantasy Points, also on Twitter at Scott Barrett DFB. And reminder about Under the Helmet and UTH Premium content coming for the NFL draft. So night one and night two, Thursday and Friday, if you're a General Manager Plus subscriber, you got that black label premium feed to all the podcasts. And what that's going to mean is no live show, but what you're going to get is basically live fire, maybe behind by 5, 10, 15 minutes if you're watching TV and the picks scroll through, is every skill position player, you're going to get a featured show. I started this last year. You're going to get a 5 to 10 minute show on Caleb Williams, on all these top quarterbacks, wide receivers, Brock Bowers in round one. You're also going to get, hopefully, fingers crossed, a drove of round day two running backs, as well as a drove of pass catchers, and maybe a quarterback or two on day two as well. But you're going to get all those shows. It's like an audio book. You're going to be able to go back, whether it's Thursday or Friday, all through the weekend or through your entire span of drafting rookie drafts. You're going to get my initial thoughts there in a concise profile-centric historical, where do they look in terms of their pedigree, their profile, their landing spot, and some live fire. Where do they go on the dynasty decision-making matrix for rookie drafting as well? So you're going to get all that in the cut-up, concise shows. There's going to be dozens of shows. However, it's going to be very easy for you to find those spots as opposed to scrolling and sorting through a 3-hour show and saying, where did he talk, about Brian Thomas? You're not going to have to wonder. It's just right there. Brian Thomas NFL draft show. So again, really looking forward to doing that. And also some built-in breaks for me. So that's never been a better time to sign up as a General Manager Plus subscriber for UTH Dynasty. And a reminder, the VIP chat room, one of the key features, and the NFL draft guide you want to get for UTH over there at patreon.com/UTH. You get a free copy, about 40 pages, concise, analytically driven. You're going to get, as opposed to just a Superflex rookie board, you're going to get the one quarterback board. You're going to get Superflex and tight end premium board. You're also going to get the full comparable prospect matrix in the draft guide. So you can get your pre-draft copy now, and you're going to get the post-draft copy at the end of NFL draft weekend. So you'll be able to dominate your rookie drafts in 2024. So never been a better time, like I said, to try out the VIP chat, try out all the bonus content. You get the special shows for patrons only there. So that's going to do it with Scott Barrett, myself, Chad Parsons. Thanks so much for listening to this special episode. Until next time, never settle, refuse to be average, and keep building those dynasties.
From muddy jungle paths to snowy trails to rolling sand dunes, the 2024 Nissan Pathfinder is ready to take you to some of the most phenomenal destinations on Earth. In a Pathfinder, it's more than just the arrival. The real excitement comes from the ride to get there. With 7 drive modes, Pathfinder's available intelligent 4-wheel drive is built for some of the most epic journeys. So chase bigger, better, more exciting adventures in the 2024 Nissan Pathfinder. Intelligent 4-wheel drive cannot prevent collisions or provide enhanced traction in all conditions. Always monitor traffic and weather conditions.